Hi, everyone. I'm Marla Nelson, also from the University of New Orleans. I'm really happy to be here today, and thank you to Mike and the rest of the panel for inviting us. So when I looked up to see what the title of my talk was today, you know, it's pretty broad. I'm going to keep my comments really limited. Hopefully we'll have some time for discussion. I've done a lot of work focusing on recovery here in New Orleans. I'm trained as an urban planner, so focused on recovery planning, mitigation planning. But I framed my work within the context of shrinking cities and planning for legacy cities. And I think if we want to talk about where New Orleans is now, 10 years after Katrina, we have to understand a little bit about where we were before the storm hit. And the fact is that New Orleans, in many ways, had more in common with places in the Rust Belt than in thriving cities here in the South. We had been losing population since the 1960s. We had a slow growing or stagnant economy. You know, in New Orleans, we say our golden era was before the railroads, right? And economically, we've struggled since then. You know, when we get an oil boom, that's a good thing, but then things taper off. So, you know, it's really important to understand that context, and I focused on the recovery within the context of long-term decline. What does a just recovery look like? So what I put up here, this is a map. If you followed any of what had happened with Hurricane Katrina, this shows the flood depths when the levees failed. 80% of the city was underwater. The water stood for up to 6 weeks, and in some places that water was as high as 10 to 15 feet. When we think about our housing stock, 137,000 housing units within the city of New Orleans were flooded. About 100,000 of them were either destroyed or severely damaged. And our public infrastructure was hit hard as well. So I saw I was supposed to talk about public schools. Only 5% of our public schools in the city of New Orleans were undamaged at all. So rebuilding was a pretty monumental task. Before Katrina, we had a huge problem with vacancy and blight. We've long been one of the most blighted cities up there with places like Detroit and Flint. Undoubtedly, after Hurricane Katrina, that problem was increased dramatically. But there is some good news. You know, as John mentioned, if we look at where we are almost 10 years out from Katrina, we're at about 80% of our pre-storm population, which I think is really very significant. And many people have used this as a sort of testament to the city's resiliency, to the residents' resiliency. And, you know, if we think back to those weeks and months after Katrina, there was a lot of discussion about whether or not New Orleans would return, whether or not it should return. So to say, hey, we're at 80% of where we were after Katrina, you know, that's really very important. But what I have here, this is a map that shows the percentage of pre-Katrina addresses that were receiving mail as of this summer. This was compiled by the data center, and it's used as a proxy of recovery. So if we can see the area that John had referred to as the sliver by the river that was unflooded, the colors here don't show up that well, I apologize, but a very dark green. These areas have 100% or more of households receiving mail from where we are in 205. But the rest of the city is pretty spotty, and there are areas that may just be at 70 or 50%. And if we think about this in the context of long-term population loss, many of these neighborhoods may have had vacancy rates of 10 or 20% before Katrina. So even if they're 80% recovered, you know, you can still walk down a block and see four vacant or abandoned houses. You know, so while I think overall our recovery has been strong, it's been very uneven. John mentioned, I think it's important to say, well, who are these, you know, the 80% of the population? We have a different population than we had before Katrina. John mentioned the influx of newcomers to the city, Latinos, and, you know, the much-hailed brain gain. You know, before Katrina, our young, talented people would leave, go to Houston, Atlanta, go somewhere else, would not stay in New Orleans because of lack of job opportunities. This is something that's gotten a huge amount of attention. People who came here after Katrina to work in recovery, people who are still coming. As someone who tries to track these trends, it's kind of anecdotal, hard to get your hand on how many of these educated folks are here. But it's something that's gotten a lot of attention. But I think we also have to ask who didn't come back. New Orleans is still an African-American dominated city, but you know, we have a much smaller share of African-Americans, and a lot of low-income African-Americans have had real difficulties coming back to the city. And part of this is because of the geography of social vulnerabilities before Katrina. Hands down, low-income minority households were disproportionately impacted by the flooding. And as a result of government decisions and the way our recovery policy was structured, that low-income minority people had a harder time coming back to the city. Two key decisions that, you know, I'll mention right here pretty quickly was the decision after Katrina to close four of our public housing projects, which was 4,000 to 5,000 units of public housing. At a time when we had lost 100,000 units, we took 5,000 affordable units off the market. So people who lived in this housing could not come back. And in fact, people had many months before they could even go back to claim what was still in their units. And the second decision, which planners don't talk about a lot but was incredibly important, was that the state superintendent decided not to reopen public schools in New Orleans. Any school that reopened after New Orleans has reopened as a public charter school. But in the entire year after Katrina, there were only like three schools that opened up. And before Katrina, our school system was 94% African American, 40% living below the poverty line. So if you were low-income African-American and you had kids, even if you were fortunate enough to still have housing to come back to, you couldn't because you didn't have anywhere to send your child. In addition, just briefly to mention, we had a housing recovery program here funded by disaster CDBG funding, $4 billion in grants to New Orleans homeowners to help them rebuild or to buy them out. And there were real inequities in this program because the way the program was structured is that it was based on your pre-storm housing values, not the cost to rebuild. And low-income minority residents, homeowners, tended to live in areas with low housing values. So like we see in disasters everywhere, I mean, this is not unique to New Orleans, but low-income homeowners got, much fewer housing recovery resources. And in many cases, people tried to come back and were unable to do so. You know, there are some bright spots, so I don't mean this to be too negative. I mean, John talked about, you know, some of the infrastructure improvements we've had. We've had a lot of reforms in the city that I think in the long run will definitely help us. We've made a lot of progress in dealing with some of our blight and abandonment. And residents are engaged. We used to have bumper stickers in New Orleans that said, New Orleans, a place that care forgot. I think that people are a lot less complacent than they were before Katrina because of the need for people to come back and fight to be back here. And there have been efforts to diversify the economy, but I think in moving forward, these inequities persist. And in some ways that they've gotten stronger. And I think we need to keep this in mind. Our elected officials like to celebrate all the achievements that we've made, and we've made a lot. But the fact is, there was a study that just came out that said we, looking at Gini coefficients, we have we rank second in terms of inequality. So John talked about the gentrifying neighborhoods and the sliver by the river. These areas were always pretty high value, but they were pretty mixed. I mean, there were lots of low and moderate income people there. You know, with the influx, the much celebrated brain gain, I mean, people are living and wanting to live in these historic neighborhoods, you know, pushing out low and moderate income folks who live there. And, you know, part of this, much of my focus is on economic development, is we have an economy built on low-wage jobs. Tourism is huge here. Our tourism industry is not unionized. Most of our jobs don't pay self-sufficiency wages, so we've got a lot of working poor in New Orleans, and a lot of that working poverty is very spatially concentrated. So we need to do more to increase the quality of our jobs, and we also need to do more to connect people who are left out of the labor market into our jobs. There was a study that came out about a year ago that said 51% of our African-American male population of working age is unattached to the labor market. You know, people who are not in any way in the formal economy. The United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world. Louisiana has the highest incarceration rate in the state of Louisiana. We don't talk about it in the city, but if we really want to improve the quality of life, you know, we've got to do something about, you know, all these folks who are coming out of the prison system and coming back into our communities. So that's it.